Okay. House Committee on Revenue for Friday, February 19th, 2016 will come to order. Colleagues, just to recap, we have the House Bill 4144, which is on the original agenda for work today. We have House Bill 4072, which was added to the agenda pursuant to the Speaker's one-hour notice rule, which is to work today. And we have House Bill 4146. We're still waiting on a fiscal for that one, and we have a timing issue having to do with when the amendment was posted. But we will get to that time before the end of the meeting. So we may very well be able to work all three of these bills. So with that, we're going to open the work session on House Bill 4144. And Chris, do you want to tell us the status of that and what we're working on? I think it's the dash five, isn't it?
It is the dash A5, Mr. Chair. So the dash A5 is in OLIS. And for folks who had been following along, it's identical to the dash A4 with one minor change. But conceptually, what the dash A5 does is it modifies the composition of the task force. It removed language regarding the compensation of task force members. It limited the tax credits under consideration to the EITC and the current dependent care credit. If you recall, prior it had all three dependent care credits listed. Two of those sunset last year, so this is basically just a moving forward perspective. It replaced the emergency clause with an E91 clause and a modified language regarding the DOR requirements. And the thing that was different in the A5 compared to the A4 is that the DHS representative is legislatively appointed to the chairperson. As prior, it was at the election of the task force. You do have the paperwork. There's a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
And I would note that the speaker's indicated that she believes this bill needs to go to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, representative for House District 46, parts of Northeast and Southeast Portland. And thank you to Chris for working with me on this and for mentioning most of the changes. I do want to point out another one, which is on page 2, line 24. It talks about the task force shall study the rates of legal utilization. This came out of a suggestion from Representative Bentz that we make sure as we are increasing utilization that we are not increasing fraud, or if there is any fraud out there, that we're actually decreasing that. So that was part of his recommendation. The other piece that I want to mention also came from a conversation I had with Representative Bentz outside of this committee when we were talking about the bill, in which we had some conversation last time about DOR questioning some of the specifics on the last part of our bill about promoting awareness for organizations that either provide tax preparation voluntary assistance or that have that are vendors and offer free software. So we had some discussion about that. We changed the language around that. Representative Nost also had some suggestions. So we talked about not promoting the organizations but promoting awareness, which is close to your educate.
All right,
It got us thinking. And that the other thing that we did was we took out the one click. That was very prescriptive. And I will say that none of us really loved the language about one click. But the reason it was in there is because we've been talking about this with DOR for a few months and hadn't seen any movement. And when I actually sat down with several of you to compare IRS.gov to the Department of Revenue and how much harder it was to find the free tax preparation assistance on Department of Revenue, that was what led us to be very prescriptive. We subsequently had a conversation with the governor's office about whether they could help us work with DOR to accomplish the same goal and not have it be in a bill. And they indeed promised to do that. I will mention, I forgot last time around as well, I just want to get it on the record, that another frustration that came out of recognizing that we're 50th out of 50 states and not getting the kind of coordinated approach that we would like to have out of all the departments is that the Department of Revenue this past year decided, they always have to decide how many things can fit on a form, and they decided to take off the EITC checklist. And so at a time where we're 50th out of 50, you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to make sure that we give very strong legislative intent and direction to all of the departments to do everything they can to try to increase legal utilization. So took away the prescriptive nature, but I just, as a result of that, want to be more clear than ever about the legislative intent to have all of the departments do everything they can with strong backing from the governor's office to work together to make sure that Oregonians who deserve these dollars and dollars are left on the table get that in their pockets. So I think that this, having gone through several reiterations now with a lot of input from a lot of different sides, some from those of you on this committee, have made it better each time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. We appreciate it. Representative Benz?
No, go ahead if you have a question.
I have no question.
I'm ready to in the dash. Sure.
Can I just say that I think it builds on the good work of the other bill that we all voted on this morning. So just wanted
thank
to close
you.
With that.
I was going to mention that later, but you're absolutely right. Things where the someone else has funds available to spend on a project that's really important, we should be taking advantage of that every chance we get because it's good for Oregonians. And it also is good for the Ways and Means process.
Right. So it's actually a combination of the two bills that we had, the Veterans Bill this morning, leveraging federal dollars left on the table, as well as the EITC increase. So this is a really good third leg of the stool.
Thank you. Representative Benz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4144.
Representative Benz moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4144. Is there a discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4144 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, but with a referral to
subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Right. Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 4144 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a further recommendation that there be a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none, it is so ordered. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 4144 and open a work session on House Bill 4072. And that's also yours, isn't it?
Yes, it is. House Bill 4072 relates to the University Venture Development Fund tax credit. So in OLIS, you do have a fiscal and revenue impact for the introduced bill. There are no amendments. The fiscal impact is a minimal, and the revenue impact, there is a revenue impact, so that statement it's up on the screen there. It has a revenue loss of $500,000 this biennium and then growing to $1.7 and $1.8 million. This is basically the reinstatement of the cap of $8.4 million for this program, and it changes the structure of the tax credit from a maximum of $50,000 claimed over 3 years to a maximum of $600,000 with a 3-year carry forward. So that structure has changed, but the overall program limitation is unchanged. Now, to date, about $4.5 million in tax credits have already been issued. So the amount of room under the cap is $4 million. So the question is really, when will those tax credits be claimed over the next 4 or 5 years? And I have them coming in roughly uniform with a little bit lower this year just because the tax credit did officially sunset, so they can't be soliciting donations with the expectation of the credit at the moment, and at least unless this becomes law. So that is the revenue impact, and as has become the custom, the policy purpose for this one is already in statute, so that's just referenced on the bottom of the statement. And what you heard some testimony about the jobs impact was a lot of discussion when the bill was heard, and I had some. There was, the chair requested whether or not it would be possible to address any of that in the impact explanation. I don't currently have that in here, but the committee heard testimony that the jobs created from the measure create some personal income tax revenue to offset the cost of the program. Those dollars, as is the custom, are not in that revenue impact in the boxes on the statement, but I can add a sentence or two to the impact explanation just to clarify that.
Okay. Representative Nels, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Chris, I've had a difficulty trying to understand this bill. And so the revenue impact that I realize it's an estimate. It could be more, it could be less, right, based on how this credit works. Is that?
Yeah, it's really a timing issue. Given the cap, only $4 million more can be issued. So it's conceivable that $4 million could go out very quickly. But just given the history of the I don't think it's likely. Otherwise, I would have indicated that in the statement.
Okay. Thank you. And how do you account then for the money that comes back from the universities as their earnings as they have earnings that occur in connection with the enterprises that they're engaged in?
That is, Mr. Chair, that is another nuance to this program. This tax credit program has a repayment to the general fund, and as those funds get repaid, they can issue more tax credits.
Right.
And to date...
So those may be a wash, they might be income to us, depending on the timing.
Correct.
Okay.
And so that's another piece I can reference and highlight a little bit more in the impact explanation when I have a little more time, but... That's kind of a repayment piece. To date, about $500,000 has been repaid, and it's a longer-term aspect to the program, but it is something we're watching over time.
Then there's another wrinkle, and I'm looking at page 3, line 38 through 41 of the bill, which says, in addition to the transferred amounts described in paragraph A of this subsection, for any amount listed on a certificate that has not been claimed as a tax credit by a taxpayer within 5 years of its issuance, a university may accept a donation and issue a certificate for an equal amount. Now, I think what it means is that if a certificate is not used by the time it expires, and of course it expires in accordance with the language higher up in the bill, I think on the first page. If it's not used at all, then they get to act as if it hadn't been issued, and that gets them space under the cap that they can use to accept another donation. Is that what that means, or does it mean something else?
That's consistent with my understanding.
Yes. Okay. All right. I received some information recently from someone who regularly appears here that would suggest that it means something different. But I think that reading it again and with your assurance, I think that is what it means. Is there any other discussion on this? Are you okay with this?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah, please.
This bill is one of those tax credits that I'm going to support, but I must say I have some issues with most tax credits, and this one it contains all of the normal challenges that go with these kinds of funding devices.
Right.
I will support it primarily because I do think that there's great opportunity in our university systems for creating jobs, businesses, and all of that. On the other hand, I'm not sure this is exactly the right place to do it, but I'm willing to give it some more time. It's still relatively new, and they explained that to us when they were here last, so I will be supporting it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. And Chris, could you explain the deleted language on page 1, lines 17 through 20? In particular, line 19, the deletion of the language, the amount of the credit allowed in any one tax year shall equal 20% of the amount actually contributed to the fund. What's the effect of the deletion of that?
Rep. Davis, this was the piece where the tax credit, somebody was allowed a $30,000 tax credit, that could only be claimed $10,000 for each of 3 years. Basically, they were awarded a tax credit, but it had to be claimed over 3 years.
Right.
And the deletion of that means that they can potentially claim that in just 1 year. So,
how do we get to the math? Follow up, Mr. Chair. How do we get to the math of 20%? Because I would have expected if they can claim it over 3 years, that would be 33.3%.
It's 20%. The credit was 60%. I make a donation of $100. I get a 60% credit.
Okay.
Each of those 20%.
Yeah.
Three times
20 is 60.
It's an odd structure. Yes.
Every so often we can do that.
And the testimony we heard basically said they were having trouble getting people to make the donations because some people weren't certain that they were actually going to have liability out in future years.
Right.
They knew about it for this year, but not for future years.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other discussion? Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4072 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Benz moves House Bill 4072 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Objections to the motion? Seeing none, it is so ordered. Let's see. Carrier. Sponsors are Olson, Rayfield, and Leininger. Representative Leiniger, who should carry this bill?
I think maybe Rayfield and Olson should co-carry.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's do that. Rayfield and Olson will co-carry, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4072. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 4146. And that gets us to MASA. Things have been happening on this bill. Now, colleagues, as while he's coming in, as I understand the rule, we cannot vote on the amendment until 1:34, which is an hour after it was posted under the rule. That doesn't prevent us from discussing the amendment before then. Is that, have I understood that rule correctly?
Yes.
All right. Manson, do you want to describe to us what we're doing here? We got rid of this bill the other day, and here it is back again.
This is one of those bills, Mr. Chair, that they will come back. It's been coming back since 2003.
And it was a lot of fun in 2003, but it's lost some of its luster since then.
That's correct.
Tell us where we are.
So this is the bill that came from the floor back to the committee. And now we have a dash A8. It was an A engrossed before, and now we have a dash A8 amendment. And if you look at that amendment, it basically does very few things. The most important of which, it changes the increase, as you would see on the first two lines of the amendment, from a 2%, or the total will be from 2% to 1.8, which means the increase is only 0.8% rather than 1% of the the tax level from the payment or the final payment by the consumer. Now that change in tax also, you would find a change in the distributions that you have in these funds. The change that the bill did before was going from the 15%, or saying at least 15%, to saying 15%. However, now that you would see it on line 7, you would see that change to a 20%, and that is for the regional cooperative tourisms. So that level now is at 20% of the amounts that comes in net after the collection costs have been paid by the providers and the Department of Revenue. And then you have on line 3, this is a number B, you have a 10% newly established competitive grant program that would be used to fund tourism-related facilities, tourism-generating events, including sport events. The other changes that you would find, which is on page 2, lines 24 to 27, these talk about the commission and the changes on how the geographical equity and so on, and then a little changes on the tourism task force that the Legislative Revenue Office would be working with. These are the changes, and I guess after the representatives would describe to you what they've been looking for, we could go through the new revenue impact statement and to have that detail for you.
Do you want to do that now?
I can do that now if you want.
Yeah.
And that revenue impact statement is, you also find it in OLIS, and it's called the A-8 TLT impact with my last name, Malik, and you would see that the increase in this sense still is on the top line of the biennial format. You would have the 15-17 that will represent 1 year only, and then the 19 And after that, it's about 30 million on average. In the biennium, we take out the collection costs of about 5% and 2% for the different collection agents. And you would have available revenue with new distributions of the 20% and the grants at the 10%. You take those out, and you will end up with a tourism commission amounts for the new revenue of about 20 million a biennium or so. And there was a question at one time of how much would an increase of that would give the tourism commission above and beyond what they are getting today from this source of revenue, the tax. And to look at basically if we take the as much as to be at a 15% total, their increase would be about 52%. And if it's at 10% only, that increase would be 40%. So it is basically as much as anywhere between 40 and 52% increase in their revenue. The amounts for the regional would be twice as much as you would see here, because that language of the bill is operative on both existing and new money. So that would be double that amount. So that's and there is, of course, also a fiscal impact statement that did not change materially much from the previous ones, because the amounts of work that is required for the bill did not change.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Nancy Nathanson, representing District 13 in the House. I want to begin by thanking very much my colleagues sitting at the table here with me instead of the chair up there, Representative Davis, for being instrumental in preparing an amendment. We have also received help from Representatives Johnson and Bueller, Leininger, Fagan, and McCune to come to this amendment that we're presenting to you today. Instead of going into details, I'd like to just get down to the bottom line. Since you saw the bill and passed it out with its previous amendment, there are a few key things we've done. The most important to note that a lot of people are interested in is the amount of the tax would be increased not by 1%, but by 0.8%. And the share that automatically goes to the regions, Oregon's seven regions, that share increases so that there's significantly more money automatically going to the each of the regions. The share it would be moved from 15% to 20%. In addition to that, there are some additional tasks given to the work group and some additional accountability and transparency, you might say. There are practices that the Oregon Tourism Commission and Travel Oregon have been following to create, for example, they have guidelines, eligibility criteria and guidelines for how they approve grants, how they review and approve grants. That exists in their internal documentation. It's clear that there is already some good direction and process that's being used. But we believe that through this amendment, it's a good idea to codify that. So there is some language that would be moved into statute to indicate how important that is. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative John Davis from House District 26. The fight in 26! That's not getting many laughs anymore. It worked well the first 2 weeks.
It's February, man.
Colleagues, I think it's most helpful as you think about what this bill does now to look at the revenue impact statement for biennium 19 through 21. That's really when we're fully phased in at the 1.8%. And recall that these numbers up here only represent the 0.8%. But just for rough number purposes, let's say we're talking with gross revenue of about $30 million in that biennium. What this bill does is states that 20% of that entire pot for the transient lodging tax will now go to our local destination marketing organizations and our regional cooperatives, is that a way to put it? That is a substantial increase because although current law says that it's up to 15%, the effective return has been, I've been told, around 12%. So in effect, these locals are going from 12% to 20% that's going to be returned to them and their destination marketing organizations. In addition, it gets better. 10% of the entire pot, current and the increase, is now set aside for a competitive grant program that our local destination marketing organizations, counties, cities can use for tourism-related facilities and tourism-generating events. We've had many local counties and DMOs come to us and say, we would like an opportunity to build tourism facilities, we'd like to be able to build an event center, and we need a place that we can go to the state to travel Oregon and compete on a basis that says this is a program, this is an idea, this is a facility that has a return on investment and the community support. This provides an opportunity for our locals to do it. It also reduces what Travel Oregon receives within itself as a entity from effectively right now 85% of the entire pot down to effectively between 65 and 70%. So it's a net reduction in the total pot, although as the bottom of the revenue impact states, it is still a substantial increase. I also want to emphasize that this bill is not about a particular event, and this program is not about a particular event. We have added sideboards. I want to really thank Representative Leininger for some great thinking. On page 2, lines 24 to 27, the money that the Travel Commission uses and the competitive grant funds must be appropriated in a way, and the Commission shall consider a demonstrated return on investment for the funds being used, that there is geographic equity in the way that funds are being returned to each region of the state, and that the programs that are the subject of the grant or the monies being returned to the particular areas have community support. I think this allows us to build on a very successful entity with Travel Oregon and the Tourism Commission. It provides additional equity for our local partners and a certain stream of funds that they may use to further local tourism and travel. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for these two? Yes, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for all the work that you and many folks have put on this. I just wanted to clarify a couple things. So, excuse me, in the prior incarnation, it was 15%. It was going from a maximum of 15% to 15%, and then the grant pot was 15%. We are still at 30% between those two. They are just allocated differently now. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. And then I just wanted to point out on page 2 in this amendment specifically, there is a little. I just wanted to make sure because it almost feels a tiny bit out of order in the way it's listed here because I believe your intent and the intent is lines 3 through 6 are that's the competitive grant program.
Yes.
But that is listed and then is the 20% that is divided regionally. You see in line 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. So, but then sections, and so section 11 to 14, that's how that 20% gets allocated. I'm sorry if you're not looking at the same, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then section C, D, and E, do those apply to the 20% or the 10% or both?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Lines 9 through 23, large A, large B, large C, large D, large E,
uh-huh,
apply to the 20%. Lines 24 through 27, subsection 5,
uh-huh,
those are the demonstrated return on investment, geographic equity, and community support,
mm-hmm,
and apply to
section B,
section A and B,
okay,
which are the 65% and the 10%.
Okay. I just wanted to get that clearly on the record.
Right.
Thank you.
Right, and this does follow the normal method of numbering paragraphs that LC uses.
Yes.
I think you've described that the same way I would,
okay,
given their conventional way of doing it. Yeah. Other Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do I find the language? I think Representative Nathanson, you referred to it, the additional oversight, if you will, of what the commission does. Where is that new language?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bentz, it's the guidelines for how the grants should be allocated on page 2, lines 24 through 27. It's directing the commission to consider demonstrated return on investment, geographic equity, and community support. And then on page 3, lines 23 through 26, we're asking the work group to discuss, in other words, to discuss regular reporting by the Oregon Tourism Commission to committees of the Legislative Assembly on demonstrated return on investment, et cetera, et cetera. The work group won't be making the reports. They will provide a recommendation on what those reports should be, how often, or mm-hmm. the content, and so mm-hmm. forth.
Follow up.
Yes, please.
Is my understanding correct that the work group is merely going to be making recommendations? It's not being given any authority to impose upon the commission anything, is it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, yes, the work group is a discussion work group without power, such as other work groups that we typically convene.
Can I follow up?
Yes, please.
And then for purposes of legislative intent, perhaps you can elaborate upon the meaning of the word consider, as it's used in that paragraph, because I want that to be way more than consider. I would want it to be there. I'd like it to be way more direct. So why are we not being more direct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, for purposes of legislative intent, it's certainly my intent that that language specify that the commission must weigh the applications and proposals it receives, and with respect to each of those applications and proposals, weigh the demonstrated return on investment, geographic equity, and community support, and select among those based on those projects and proposals that best meet those criteria.
I'm personally glad that you've stated it that way, because that's exactly what I would expect the commission to do given this language. Mm-hmm. Representative Bentz? Another question, Representative Whitsitt?
Thank you. Just so I'm clear, there will be a large corpus that the Oregon Tourism Commission will have each year. It's a multi-part question. Do they expect to spend it each year? And if they do not spend it each year and it accumulates, how will it be invested, or how will it be held, and who will be in charge of that investment or holding?
Nazan, do you know about that?
I think it statutes does require the revenues to be deposited in.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Representative Davis.
I would point the committee to page 1, mm-hmm. line 15, investments made by the commission, which would be the corpus of the funds collected by the transient lodging tax, must be limited to the investments described in ORS 294-0353A to Romanet 1. And we all, of course, know and have read and are very familiar with ORS 294-0353A.
Refresh us.
Earlier today, I had it pulled up. Whoever's fastest with their computer can pull it up.
Please jump in. But while he's pulling it up, I have another question. Will the legislature, and this kind of goes to what Rep. Benz was asking, will the legislature have any say in this corpus of the primary funds? And if not, how do we make sure it's being spent properly? If so, is it ever at risk of being swept by Ways and Means, which happens now and then?
Well, that's a great question. Do we know the answer to that one?
Mr. Chair, these funds do not go through the Ways and Means process. Mm-hmm. So they are outside the Ways and Means reach, if you will.
So back to my first question. Does the legislature have any say over these funds in any capacity as they build up or not?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davis.
I do know, Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I do know that the Tourism Commission does have a rather robust report on their expenditures and the return on investment that they spend that is returned to the presiding officers, and I do also believe legislative members. It's a regular report. I cannot recall if it's annual or every other year. That information is available, and that is one of the issues that we intend to study in this work group, is to make sure that that reporting is robust enough. As for approval of the budget itself, which I think is at the core of your question, I don't have a clear answer on that question. I've heard assertions that no, it's under no authority. I've also heard assertions that once that report is issued, that we have some ability to approve the budget. But that may or may not be the case, and it's not clear to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, as our counsel would say, the legislature, of course, has a supreme authority to put their hands on anything that they would. And this is a tax that is levied by statute, so it is the creation of statutes. So if they choose, the legislature could actually divert this whole thing back into, I mean, that is a choice the legislature can do. However, as it is done today, you would see in the statutes, it says that these are exempt from Ways and Means processes, which means they don't have the budget of the commission does not have to go through the Ways and Means appropriation statute, and they are continuously appropriated in that way.
Yeah, hence the reason for a robust report, as Representative Davis, so that we'd know what they're doing, even though we don't actually oversee it on a regular basis. Yes. Another question?
I would just like to make a comment that this fund could accumulate rather quickly to a large amount of money. If you start talking about money, you know, we could end up with $100 million in there, or I kind of compare it to the Energy Trust of Oregon. We have a lot of money there. The legislature really can't get their hands on it, per se. We get reports, but I'm concerned about making potentially a huge fund that we, through statute, that we don't have any say over, essentially. Just my concern.
Representative Nathanson, please.
That hasn't actually
happened, has it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Whitsitt, in the previous amendment and still continuing in the proposal, should you choose to adopt this amendment in front of you, still remaining in the bill that you have already moved forward, is a section where we add a very strict new reporting requirement. Even though the reports that Representative Davis described were still happening, we wanted to be a little more firm and codify the practice. So we added a section, which you've already moved into the bill at your previous meeting. No later than October 1st of each year, the Oregon Tourism Commission shall submit a report to the legislative fiscal officer that identifies the funds received by the commission during the prior fiscal year and pursuant to the amendments to ORS 320.305 by Section 1 of this Act, the awards and commitments approved by the commission of these funds and of funds received in prior fiscal years, and information requested by the legislative fiscal officer regarding these funds. And the legislative fiscal officer may request, and upon the request of the commission, shall supply additional information with respect to any grants of $2 million or more, et cetera. So already in the bill and remaining in the bill is this new reporting requirement on the state of their budget, if you will.
Yeah, let me get back to the first question that you had, and that had to do with the investment authority in ORS 294.035. And I'll simply note that this applies to political subdivisions, approved investments. So it applies to not just this body, but a whole bunch of others. And it essentially talks about a variety of different things that can be invested in, the first couple of which are U.S. Debt instruments and the state of Oregon debt instruments, and then there's a whole bunch of others, all of which have been approved in the past by the legislature as prudent and safe investments for this kind of a fund, where you're not going out there and trying to take on big risks. I hope that answers the earlier. I forgot who asked that question, but I hope that answers that question. Representative Bentz, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the challenge that I face with this bill is that the scope of that which the commission can invest in has been too narrow in the past. One of the things that's been tried unsuccessfully is to expand the use of the funds for law enforcement, for example, or for street improvement, but of course you couldn't do that. So we had the odd situation of getting money for people to come and visit but no roads to drive on to get there, or worse, when they got there, no law enforcement. And so did you see the study group as including a broadening of the scope of that which the money can be spent upon from that which it currently is? I was just looking down through the list, A, B, so forth, and trying to find out if we are directing that group to look at that issue.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bentz, we did not discuss, and to my knowledge, contemplate in our conversations broadening the scope to things that were not directly related to increasing the economy through tourism investments. Some of the discussions and questions that I have heard prior to this afternoon about wanting to provide more flexibility to local governments on how to spend their money are related to the transient lodging tax that is applied locally. This bill is about the state lodging tax only. In addition to this, many local governments have developed a local lodging tax, and for that, there is a requirement that at least 70% of the funds be spent on tourism and no more than 30% be spent on any other general purpose programs that local government wishes to spend it on. In other words, local government now, on anything that they had adopted prior to 2003, any local tax that was in place by 2003, they can spend however they want. Anything that they have added or increased since 2003 must be spent according to this new criteria. 30% however they want, but at least 70% has to be spent on tourism since it's a tax on lodging. So that was the agreement in 2003, and that is usually what's been the subject of discussion, that 30-70 split. And if I've misstated how that works, please correct me.
Follow up.
Yes, please.
Okay, the chair has pointed out, I think, subsection 5, sub B, barriers to, the work group would be looking at barriers to expansion and maintenance of recreational tourism in each tourism region. Is that the one you were looking at?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think for purposes of legislative intent, it would be my hope that people in the work group would recognize that this issue of how that money should be spent needs to be addressed by that work group, and whether or not it should be a broader base than what currently exists.
Yeah, if you can't get there, or if there's no law enforcement once you get there, that may be a barrier.
It might be.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. Representative Smith-Werner, and then someone over here. No?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Please. Chair. And while we're talking about possible topics for the work group, I would just like to propose the idea. One of the things about the grant process that I think you and I had discussed before was that right now there's a matching, it's a matching fund situation. And I would just like to suggest that that's something that maybe the work group can look at, because there are communities or things. And I know we all believe in one of my least favorite expressions, having skin in the game. But just to have the work group look at that as they see how the grant program is rolling out, that can be something that they keep an eye out for as well. Is that matching? Is the matching requirement keeping things from getting done perhaps in smaller communities or ones with less resource or that are constrained by that 70-30? Are they missing opportunities? So that could maybe be looked at again in the future.
Okay. Thank
you for those nods.
I think that wasn't a question. Yeah, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I continue on this subject to come back to a broad-based look at that this is a revenue stream collected 75% from non-Oregonians. Mm-hmm. This is one of the few ways as a state that we have an ability to receive some assistance from those who come to our state and enjoy its beauty and its incredible bounty.
Yes. The rate is 26. Representative Johnson, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to point out that I think we're past 134 now.
I think he's suggesting it may be time for a motion.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, a recess.
Thank you. There's been a request for a recess. Can we be back here before 2 o'clock? Can we manage that? All right. We'll recess for 5 minutes. Committee's in recess. All right. The committee will reconvene. Does that lead to any further discussion? Representative Davis?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A8 amendments to House Bill 4146A.
Representative Davis moves the dash A8 amendment to this bill, House Bill 4146. Further, any discussion? This is the amendment we've been talking about. Any objection to the amendment?
I do have I'll wait on the bill.
On the bill, okay. No objection. Amendment's approved. Representative Davis, would you do the honors?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4146A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Davis moves House Bill 4146A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank Representative Nathanson and members of this committee for the hard work on this bill. Things have been moving extremely quickly, and in order to give all of us an opportunity to not get ahead of ourselves, I do say that although I'll be supporting this bill and this amendment as is, my local community are still reviewing it, considering the amendment was posted about an hour ago. And we will be spending the weekend seeing what they think about it.
Okay.
I also want to add for the record that Legislative Council did come racing down here during our recess to point out that the relating clause to the bill is relating to state transient lodging tax. Therefore, the work group would be limited in its ability to consider the changes to the local lodging tax. That would not be within the purview of the work group.
Right. They could still consider the effect on the local community of the state lodging tax in light of the local lodging tax as one of the variables to be considered.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a no on this for a number of reasons. One, the availability of the money supplied by those touring our state is appreciated. But the tax burden that can carry is limited. And as we allow this additional tax to go to the state, we, of course, by definition, rob the local community of that opportunity. This bill does that, and it does it too aggressively. That's one reason I'll be a no. The second, I did notice the word geographic equity. I didn't hear anyone talk about that. I'm not sure exactly what that means. since I have the largest district in the state, it means, I guess, to me, I get one-third of the money. sounds like equity to me.
Yes,
you will all chime in and say it's the same for you, then I probably will change my vote. Guessing that that's not what it means, but let's hope it means something better than what we've been seeing when it comes to what this group does. But that being said, I'll still be a no.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Davis? I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I appreciate the amendment. I think it makes improvements to the bill from the one that I voted against a couple of days ago and in the committee. But as Representative Davis said, we'll continue to get input from our folks on the local front as they process this, and we'll have to factor all that in. But looking forward to casting a yes vote today.
Thank you. Other discussion, Representatives? Smith Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am planning to be a yes vote on this again, as I was with my courtesy vote last week. I stated then that I was hoping that the amount would be decreased. I had been hoping for a larger decrease, but I am happy that it has gone down. And I also think that we have alluded to but not talked too directly about the large increase in the Tourism Commission's budget. And I think they had some great numbers when they first presented to us about the impact that we promote, and here's the results. Tourism is increased. They have a lot of good information. I just hope this committee and this body as a whole will keep an eye on, as we are significantly increasing their budget to do that, are we getting a commensurate return on investment, and or might there be other things that we could or should be using this this significantly enhanced income on instead? So I just want to point out that that's something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on moving forward.
Thank you. Further debate? Given what we've heard, I think we better call the roll. The question is on moving the bill to the floor as amended with a new pass.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Hell.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Leininger.
Aye.
Representative Noe.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner.
Aye.
Vice Chair Betts.
No.
Chair Barnhart.
Aye. Representative Woodson is excused. The ayes have it. The bill goes to the floor yet again with a new pass recommendation as amended. Representative Nathanson, are you up to carrying it again? Representative Nathanson will carry, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4146. And we've cleared our agenda today, haven't we, Paul? We have. Committee is adjourned.
Do we have another meeting this week? Take care. Not